Hello, and welcome to Spartan Speak, a podcast from the Lansing State Journal and Detroit Free Press focused on Michigan State sports. I'm Phil Front, your host and sports writer for LSJ. Joining me this week, as always, are two guys just lazily sitting on their couch wearing their Lake Lansing t-shirt. It's LSJ sports columnist Graham Couch and Detroit Free Press Michigan State beat writer Chris Solari. Gentlemen, how are you guys doing on this beautiful Tuesday morning?
Was that a soprano pitch we just heard from you?
Yeah, my voice went up a level there while doing the normal read. I don't know what happened, but you know what? We're gonna leave it.
Excellent.
I'm doing good, Phil.
Thank you.
Great to be here. Oh, that's my eighth grade voice.
I was gonna say that's your Pat Mahomes voice, is what it sounds like to me. Well, guys, we spent a little bit of our pre-production meeting, in quotes as always, talking about the HBO show Winning Time, which premiered on Sunday night. So let's just kick things off, talk about that a little bit. I know you guys have a lot of thoughts about that, and I think I do as well. I think the general theme is that all of us enjoyed it. Chris, kind of start us off here.
Yeah.
You were the one that demanded that Graham and I watch it before we record, so...
I did, because I mean it was fun, and I told you guys that before in our lengthy pre-prod meeting. I thought it was a fun episode, and it's going to be interesting to kind of follow that along. And I don't think you should take it with 100% historical accuracy by any means. I think Doc Tucker wasn't around in there, which was, you know, anybody who's been around MSU and Lansing area and know Magic's backstory, know how important Doc Tucker is to him as an agent. But seeing his father represented, seeing, you know, obviously the Lake Lansing shirt kind of caught me off guard a little bit. And that's actually a local Lansing made product, which was pretty cool. They got some pub with that, but there's also a lot of Michigan State stuff in there and hints of the 79 championship game. So I think, just, you know, if you want to tie it back to this, I mean, this is going to be a pretty well received series. I mean, we'll see how long it goes and see how much they try and do, how many seasons, but at least for right now, I mean, you know, it everything's about marketing. If you follow Mel Tucker's program at all right now, and this is a boost for Michigan State in some ways too. But I thought, fun as it was, you know, there was the scene with Norm Nixon. I'm sorry, that was a little over the top. That's probably the one spot that I thought was ridiculous and over the top. The one-on-one game that they allegedly played, and Magic looked like a baby giraffe on roller skates,
yeah,
against Norm Nixon. I find it hard to believe that Magic Johnson ever wouldn't have been sitting down and taking anything kind of guy, even at that point. But otherwise, it was a good, fun show.
Yeah, I enjoyed it immensely. I thought that, first of all, I'm a Lansing snob, so I love when there's lots of Lansing and anything. I love the some of the Magic 30 for 30 stuff that's been around with Little LA and, you know, Lansing and that whole stuff up. But I enjoyed the fact that he took a slight shot at Everett High School and that scene and sort of referencing without saying it that he wanted to go to Sexton, my alma mater, which I appreciate. I just it's a fun piece. You know, I think anybody who lives here or grew up here or, you know, knows Magic's a Lansing guy, his parents have stayed here. I think there's, you know, Magic is part of this community's soul. He's a son of Lansing, and he's never, truly left it. And I think that is, so anything about Magic is going to be something that's endearing to people around here and to Michigan State, frankly, because, for, you know, two decades, he was the best thing MSU basketball had going for it. And he was the alumni who stuck around. He was, until they won that second title, he was Michigan State basketball's best credibility for a long, long time.
You know, what's interesting too is the author of the book, Winning Time, Jeff Perlman, just kind of spinning it all back around. I bet it was about probably 10 years ago, maybe a little bit more than that, that I actually connected with Jeff on a story about former Lugnuts manager Sal Fasano.
As one does.
But he and Fasano kind of got close. So So, I mean, he's a guy that, I mean, obviously his big draw was the John Rocker story in SI back in the day that really painted out who John Rocker was and at the height of his popularity. So, you know, he is a writer who's delved into a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for, controversial areas and had some backlash on things at times. And I know Magic's not, it didn't sound like he's too happy about this from what I've read, didn't plan on watching it. And I guess that both he and Jeannie Buss also have similar things that are coming out. I don't know if it'll be in the dramatic vein like this is. So I think it's going to whet the appetite. It's going to be, what this is going to be is kind of the Hollywood version, which, listen, I mean, if the Lakers were anything, they were nothing but Hollywood. So I think it kind of fits with that, you know, but it's more of a, to me, somewhat fictitious or embellished. There's a lot, I think there's going to be a lot of embellishments in this, as we've already kind of seen a little bit, but it's fun. It's a fun show, and it's going to whet the appetite for maybe a reentry into Magic Johnson as the player, that kind of like what The Last Dance did for Jordan, but in a little different vein.
Yeah, this won't have the advantage of the pandemic where we all get together every, you know, Sunday night and sort of Tiger King it up a little bit. You know, that's not going to – but you're right. I do think – and there's some interesting performances in there. I mean, the Jerry West character is just fantastic.
John C. Reilly's outstanding. Oh, my gosh.
John C. Reilly's definitely the best part of it. He feels like he's got Dr. Buss nailed pretty good there.
He does. He does.
Do you know who played Jack Kent Cook?
Yeah, it was Noonan from Caddyshack.
Noonan, that's right. Noonan, Danny Noonan from Caddyshack.
Yeah. No, I recommend it. I think anybody who cares about Lansing, Michigan State, Magic, or just likes basketball stuff and to be entertained, it's definitely entertaining. It's fun. It's well-produced. They take some shots at society and other things that are funny in there. I mean, the descriptions of Magic and Bird when they're coming out are pretty funny, and just sort of the way the media played the racial card back then was sort of,
I would say it's still coded that way in certain aspects, even in 2022.
Very much so, but it was more blatant back then. It was, you know, hardworking, gritty Larry Bird versus, you know, flashy, you know, and they sort of lay it out. There were some funny graphics. So yeah,
As much as John C. Reilly was funny, I think I cannot wait to keep watching Jerry West dropping F-bombs and swearing up a storm, because I think that's just like the old school kind of pro athlete vibe that it might seem embellished, but I think that anybody who's been around high level athletes and over the course of the last 30, 40 years, there's some truth to that the biggest of competitors sometimes are the pottiest of mouths.
And sometimes people you think one way about in the public sphere are very different privately. And that's something I think they're trying to lay out with Jerry West in terms of his, I mean, everybody's known he can be, I think he's had some issues with sort of, I'm being unhappy. I don't want to say depression to what level. Cause I don't, that's a little tough to say, but
yeah.
But he's certainly a surly person, but that is magnified in this without a question.
That seems to be so far like the most controversial part in terms of how he has been portrayed. Like, I don't know how much of it was true that he didn't want Magic at all and preferred Sidney Moncrief. I don't know if anybody's read Winning Time, or Showtime, the book.
I have not read the book yet, but that, I mean, that, there's truth to that.
Okay.
He felt the Lakers at that point needed more of a scorer to build around Kareem.
Maybe all that stuff wasn't as embellished as maybe I personally thought. And I also want to add that did I buy that Lake Lansing shirt from Lansing Clothing Company last night? You betcha. I am a I am a sheep for popular culture.
One of my favorite lines from Phil Friend ever. And I was asking you at one point why you drove Uber as well, and you said something about having to support your lifestyle.
Yes,
it was like we were in a meeting somewhere, and it was just It was very diva like the way you said it. I have to support my lifestyle.
Yes, when you spend more money than you make, you know, you gotta you gotta come up with alternative options. And then, you know, in some respects, I'm taking my cues from Magic Johnson there. You know, he lived a lavish lifestyle. So only the best of us in Lansing here can follow in our footsteps.
Neither of you guys are old enough to remember when the NBA finals were preempted, are you?
No.
I still think they were preempted in like the mid 80s.
No, they weren't. By then, they were preempted.
I can remember watching preempted NBA finals on CBS late, you know, like 11 o'clock.
So, what year would that have been, Chris? I mean, you're 56. So, what year is that? 65?
I am. See, this, you talk about the embellishments here, like the 47 second questions, and I'm 57 years. It goes right with you. I mean, it's like I'm only 10 more minutes away and I'll be done. And so half hour, 45 minutes later, it kind of pops up. But no, I'm 47. So, you know, that was when I started, you know, at 80, 81, 82.
Okay.
You know, I think off the top of my head, the one that I can remember, I think the Sixers final, because I really enjoyed watching Dr. J as a kid. I think that's one I definitely remember. I believe that the Lakers' first finals were actually preempted by Dallas. So,
it's possible. The first final I remember, and I don't know where, and this goes to my fandom and explains a lot. Like, I became a, like, I remember the 85 finals a little bit with Celtics-Lakers, but 86 finals, I became a massive Houston Rockets fan for whatever reason, with Ralph Sampson and Hakeem Olajuwon, the Twin Towers, and the hook shot. But I was such a front runner back then. I was a fan of the 85 Bears for a brief moment. Like, there are finger paintings that are still in my parents' house of Ralph Sampson and Hakeem Olajuwon that I made in 86, like, you know, like 6 years old, thinking that was my team or something. So by that time, they were certainly live. Based on my bedtimes, there's no way they were preempted.
I had a pair of there, and I'm sure this will hopefully come up at some point, but before the Jordans, the big shoe was the Converse Cons, the black layer. We talk about the racial dynamics of this. I mean, Magic's, you know, yellow, purple, and white ones versus the black and white ones of Larry Bird were very much a cultural touchstone of between white kids and black kids, and or even in where I grew up. Where there weren't, I mean, it wasn't much ethnic diversity. You know, you could tell the kids who really enjoyed Magic versus and that style of basketball versus the grittiness of Larry Bird. And that it's going to be fascinating to kind of watch this thing evolve show, because I think there's a lot of this that they are going to cover in terms of just what Magic and the Showtime Lakers did to not just revolutionize basketball, but also to kind of break basketball into that cultural realm where those Jordan ones and the dunk contest all of a sudden was a thing that everybody kind of started rallying around. Didn't matter whether you were white, black, Hispanic, or anything. I mean, if not for Magic and Bird, there's probably not the global acceptance of the NBA as there is today.
Yep, I agree. Although I will say that the first season of Winning Time is only going to cover this Magic rookie year, so I don't know how far we'll get into the Converse and stuff like that. We might at that rate, it might have to be like four or five seasons down the line before we get to the
I have a feeling this thing's going to have some staying power.
Yeah,
I really do.
So, yeah, and it's sort of to wrap up to get to Chris's point, sort of before we get to MSU here. The you know, Magic is at the age I am. I was not always like the kids growing up were very divided, because remember the Bad Boys were. You know, this is peak Bad Boys when I'm a kid. And so the Lakers are a Pistons rival, and Magic came to our elementary school. I still remember him walking down the street and sitting there in Miss Gardner's third grade class as he came and spoke to our school, because one of the fourth grade teacher's husband was his middle school coach. And so this is like 80, 88. And so there were kids on the That's playground awesome. That would love Magic. There were kids at other things you go with Magic fans, because he went to Everett or he grew up in Lansing or they liked the Lakers. And I wasn't even a big Magic fan for a long time, because as a kid, he was on the other side of Isaiah and Dumars. And so there was some weird divides in terms of my age group in Lansing, even though he was an MSU guy, because I wasn't around when he went to MSU or Everett or anything like that. So I think that my sort of magic curiosity and fandom sort of came in the 90s later.
I kind of, my cousin, there was no NBA team in Pittsburgh when I was growing up. And really the, Connie Hawkins, Pittsburgh Pipers back in the ABA days were there. So my NBA, cheering was for the Pittsburgh Pisces in the Fish That Saved Pittsburgh, which I believe is going to be referenced this season. So keep an eye out for that. You don't have Space Jam and all these other basketball movies without the Fish That Saved Pittsburgh. Mark my words with that. But my cousin was a huge Magic fan, and I was, it's kind of NBA free agency in Pittsburgh. And, because of my ties to Michigan and Detroit, I was a huge Bad Boys fan at that point as well. But at the same point there, I don't feel like there was the same kind of visceral anger or, hatred towards Magic, towards Jordan. I think there was, if you didn't have an NBA team, you did see kids like my cousin just picking a guy like that, big Jordan as well. I mean, I can remember the Jordan, when they came out when I was in fifth grade. Yeah. I mean, if you didn't have Air Jordan ones, when you were playing basketball, you were kind of castigated a little bit. He's not really a serious basketball person, but Magic, I mean, that was the guy that really, I think, started to kind of rally them, not just Magic, but Magic and Bird. Cause I had friends on both sides that were diehards for both of those guys. And, it's amazing what a kid from Lansing and a kid from Phil's area of Indiana, not really.
That's
but
right.
You know what I mean? It's like from
Springs Valley High School.
I mean, these guys took their games to each side of the coast and, really brought everybody in the middle to the game, which is, it's fascinating. I think that's what makes that era of basketball to me maybe a little bit more compelling than even the Jordan era, because and I think they're starting to kind of cover this. That basketball wasn't really thought of the same way in the late 70s and early 80s as it was once Magic and Bird started to bring that rivalry from the college game and from that 79 championship game into the NBA to Boston to LA and really kind of reviving where the sport had been in the late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll have a lot more winning time to talk about here in the weeks to come here. And our listeners might be asking ourselves, why did we spend the first 19 minutes of this podcast talking about winning time? Well, besides the Magic Johnson Lansing connections, there's the Michigan State basketball team is maybe not as fun or interesting to talk about as of late. Yes, they ended their regular season with a 77-67 win over Maryland on Sunday, but in between or before all that, there was a road loss to Ohio State, a road loss to Michigan by 11 and 17 points. And then, if you go two games before that, there was a 26-point loss to Iowa. So, yeah, that's why we started with winning time. But now I think we can start getting out of the nitty-gritty of this Michigan State basketball season. They will open their Big Ten tournament as the 7th seed, taking on Maryland once again on Thursday. Graham, at least it was nice to see the Spartans win their regular season finale. And as in the column that you wrote earlier this week, to see Malik Call have a big game once again.
There were a number of things that happened that I think were important. One, that it was truly a feel good home game, right? I mean, it was when Julius Marble's hitting 16-foot hook shots and Marcus Bingham's hitting his first good threes. Those are home games that happened to every team where things, that just doesn't happen on the road very often, or in a neutral court. And, what the actual meaning of those things is hard to say. I do think where there's value is they needed to stop the bleeding. They needed to feel good. They needed all of that. But then they also needed the way it unfolded, I think. I really think it was important that they were challenged in the second half to some degree and forced to respond, because I really thought they were going to lose when they got it down to like 5 and 3 points and Maryland cut it back after having that 20-point lead. So I do think that, you know, I think those were important things, because this was a team I thought was on the verge of sort of being done and had to make a decision to, and Gabe Brown comes with some huge buckets at key times to sort of get them out of that dicey situation. And then Malik Hall, who's really been absent for 5 of the last 6 games, comes through with a stretch of basketball that puts the game away. And, you know, you just look at his wins and losses. I mean, I think in wins this year, he averages like 11.6, and in losses, it's like 6.2, and he takes almost 3 more shots a game. Like, he is a different – when he plays well, they are a different team, because he provides something that is of quality. He's a versatile player, can score a number of ways, gives them something they don't have anywhere else on the roster. And so I thought there were a number of things that were important. They could just as easily lose to Maryland on Thursday in the Big Ten tournament, but certainly a decent way to end the regular season.
Yeah, which they did last year. Remember, they went down to Indy and lost to Maryland that first game, 1 and done. I think the Sunday's game was huge for the seniors, because, first of all, I think, you know, what gets lost with some of the up and downs that this team has kind of gone through, and really kind of how all three of those guys with Bingham, Brown, and Hauser, they've all at some point or another drawn the ire and frustration of the fans and the coaches, but they're good dudes. I mean, it's, you know, it was nice to see them have a senior day that they can remember, you know, and kind of enjoy the moment, enjoy it, you know. Izzo talks about leaving a you know, footprints in the sand. And for those guys, you know, that last game at home, if that is their last game as a Michigan State player, it's going to be a great thing that they're going to remember for the rest of their lives. I mean, what, they, you know, Bingham and Brown scored the first 11 points. They go out, get off to a 14-0 run. Hauser's, you know, distributing the ball and grabbing rebounds early. He hit a big three. And like you said, with Brown scoring 7 straight points and then Hall scoring those last 7 after that, you know, that was a lot of what we saw earlier in the year. And when Tom Izzo came to the post game, he said he had talked to George Blaha right afterward. I thought, leave it to George to sum it up perfectly. He said, I saw a season in one game. And he did. I mean, it was everything that we've seen all season with this team, all the way from missed free throws at inopportune times to clusters of turnovers going the other way and a big lead vanishing. But the thing that we haven't seen much lately was that response, like you said, the ability to not just hold on, but to kind of reassert themselves down the stretch and say, we're not going to lose this game. How that bodes the rest of this month, you know, it's going to be critical. But they haven't had that. They haven't had that kind of moment in a while. And you need that. You need to be able to not just prove it, but have the confidence that you're able to do it. And that's something that Izzo has talked about over the past week. It's nothing that they haven't done this year. And I think that's where the frustration level comes, because people have talked about, well, what would this, if you would have had a 20-11 season and someone said that's what you're going to be in November, I think a lot of people would have really liked it and said, we'll take that. But it's how that season went with the 14-2 start and then the absolute, you know, every end of the spectrum fluctuations since that Michigan cancellation in early January. You know, what we're going to see from here out, who knows? Because it's just so hard to predict what this team's going to do, you know, down in Indianapolis and then wherever they go after that.
Like, I think the things that happened Sunday went about as well in terms of them having a chance to make make some moves in Indianapolis this week. They went about as well as they could have, because I think their path is, well, I don't know, it's ideal to play Maryland directly again. Maryland's a beatable team, certainly, and you know, Indiana would have been no more or less likely that they would win that game. But the next round, perhaps, would be Wisconsin for Michigan State, which is, I think, different than facing Purdue, which it might have been. Earlier scenarios could have wound up against Illinois, too. But Wisconsin, that is a team that they can They beat by 12 on the road. They physically match up with better than, say, Purdue, having to take them out again. And I know I'm just the latest guy to doubt Wisconsin, but I just think if you're hoping Michigan State gets around to the weekend, or you want to go down for it and have some hope of that, I think what happened Sunday was beneficial, because I don't think they're a team that, you know, I don't think they're a team we're going to see put together a great run. I think they could have a great game or a game that beats Wisconsin and gets them to Saturday. I would be pretty surprised if they were to do anything beyond that.
Yeah, you mentioned Wisconsin. I mean, they lost to Nebraska on Sunday without Bryce McGowan. So,
they lost Johnny Davis in the second half to injury, but that game was close even still. And Nebraska beat Penn State by like 25, and then they beat Ohio State by 8 on the road. And Nebraska's good. What I love about Nebraska, and this is just my own snarkiness, is I love what they're doing to the metrics right now. You essentially, if you consider Nebraska a bad loss for somebody right now, because they are, according to the net and Ken Pom, then you're not watching the games. I mean, Ken Pom almost has to be thrown out. His whole business model has to go away. Same with the net, everything. For Nebraska right now, you cannot use any metric with Nebraska, not in judging Nebraska. Nebraska doesn't deserve to be in the tournament. You can't just have a great last week. But to me, you cannot consider what happened to those teams that lost to Nebraska bad losses the way you would have 2 weeks ago if you watch the games. And if you don't have a metric that can deal with that, then you can't use the metrics. And I think that's the one thing where metrics really fail with good and bad losses, is teams evolve throughout a season. Now, you will see very few teams that ever go from as horrible as Nebraska to as well as they've played. And it's a great example of where there's a flaw in the system.
And it's going to be interesting, because I think that, you know, there's probably 13 teams out of the 14 that can beat anybody. I don't know about Minnesota. They've been down so much, but they also have veterans who could, you know, when the lights come on and, you know, the end is there, can always change it too. So maybe you could say all 14 teams have a chance to win their at least one or two games. I don't know how many years you can say that. This year's been such a up and down year. And I mean, you know, the Davis injury is going to be interesting. You know, I know that Greg Gard said that he thinks he's going to play in Indianapolis, but what happens if he doesn't? I mean, you know, that Michigan State Maryland winner could win two games and all of a sudden be in Saturday in the semifinals. So I don't know. It's going to be a very compelling tournament, I think, because I do think even teams like Rutgers, you know, because they've got that veteran presence and they've beaten most everybody in the conference. You know, you put them, stick them on a neutral court with the veterans that they've got. I mean, would it shock you if Rutgers all of a sudden comes out and gets hot and wins the thing? No.
And to that point, Chris, it appears Rutgers might need a win or two here, despite finishing fourth in the Big Ten. It's weird that they're on the bubble, whereas, you know, this seems like Michigan appears to be firmly in. Grant, I see you shaking your head. I know, I agree with you that Rutgers should be in, but it does not appear that they're 100% in yet, is all I was saying.
I mean, Chris, are you with me on this, that Rutgers should be in? Because I just cannot, I yeah. cannot stand the idea that I at some point good wins and bad losses can't be treated the same. At some point, the good wins are just too dang good not to be what wins the day. They have wins over Iowa, Wisconsin, Ohio State, Illinois, and Purdue. That is not a bubble team. This is not 1997 Michigan State 16, you know, that's an NIT team. That's not an NIT team. That is you because the whole point of the tournament is to make sure you have also the champion in there. Like, to me, you want a legitimate tournament. It's got Rutgers in there, because otherwise it'd be the Final Four and Rutgers might have been there. You know, like, Rutgers can beat anybody in that field. They have to be in, and they've done enough to deserve to go.
Absolutely. Now, I think the one thing about Rutgers that has been probably their biggest bugaboo is the ability to win on the road. They've been fairly dominant at home. You know, now you start talking about getting into the tournament scenario where it's on neutral court. You know, how much does that benefit them? It'll be fascinating, because I do think that it's a heck of a team. I mean, it's got so many veterans that, you know, they went to the tournament last year. They should have been in 2020 as well. So, I mean, they're an experienced bunch. But, I mean, Yeah, I mean, they beat. I mean, the Michigan win looked a lot better than when they beat them. But you know, still, you beat Purdue, you beat Illinois. I mean, you can't argue those. You can't argue those victories that they've had along the way. But I think they're in. You know, that said, they also lost to Lafayette and they lost to UMass, but they were a different team then because they had guys that were out. So, and that's something the committee is going to take into account. Yeah. And I think they're still in regardless.
Yeah. And here's the thing. This is where I think that the seeding should be reconfigured in the NCAA tournament a little bit. I think teams should get priority at the top, and the seeding should be done based on, like, so once you decide the field, say Rutgers, you decide is in. Well, now you have to seed them, but they shouldn't be seeded entirely on where you might have their resume, because that's not, if they're an 11, that's not fair to the team that played all year to be a 6 and isn't as good as them, or it doesn't have close to their, or it doesn't have their ceiling. To me, then you seed a team based on what's truly fair to the opponent. Also, that's better. I mean, like, I would maneuver the seeding differently once I decide the 68 team field to be fair to the clubs that are better, that are, have higher seeds. Like, if the flip side of that is, if you're an 8 seed, if Rutgers becomes an 8-9, I guess there's no good place for him, because if Rutgers becomes an 8-9, that's the last team I want to see as a 1, as an 8. You know, that's a team that's capable of taking down most teams on a given day, more so than most 8 seeds. I'd rather see Michigan State than Rutgers, even though Michigan State can turn out a great performance here and there. And I don't know. To me, if Rutgers isn't in, I cover the tournament for a living, so I'll still cover it. I can't boycott the thing. But it would be – I would be so furious, and I would be so angry at the metrics that lead to this, that I would be completely done with it.
I think what's going to be interesting to watch, you know, is a couple of the other teams like Indiana. I think that's someone. Indiana and Michigan, to me, I think, are the two teams that go down to Indianapolis with the most – to gain or lose. I don't know about you, Grant, but I mean, but I think both of those teams seem like they're closer to the bubble to me than Rutgers.
Indiana, I think, is. And Michigan, I understand. And, you know, Rutgers played a weak non-league schedule. And at this point in the program, they shouldn't be doing that. So to that point, that's the one argument, you know, that I'm always, and I'm for intent and scheduling, so to speak. That bothers me a little bit. This isn't Rutgers of 5 years ago or whatever. But yeah, no, I think, and first of all, I know they don't look at leagues, but when you're the 4 seed, and I know everything's jumbled there and there's not much difference between 4 and a, but you got a double bye. Like, Rutgers doesn't even have an opportunity to get an easy win. Like, all they got left is probably playing Iowa, who might be the hottest team in the league. It wasn't for some free throws, would have taken out Illinois on the road in the last game of the season and controlled most of that game. Like, you don't lose to Iowa and that drops you from the tournament. Like, there's no. So what you're saying is they would have been better off as the 5 seed and having one more game. I don't get that. Yeah, I think Indiana's got to win. I think Michigan's in. I think the Ohio State win was too good. Some people, I guess, losing to Indiana wouldn't be great. Indiana, I think, probably definitely has to win. But again, this is just us reading, like, the numbers and the bracketologists, that everybody seems to be in consensus with certain things, including that MSU is like in an 8-9 line. Here's my question for you guys. Could MSU – so let's say what's realistic for MSU. Let's not talk about some magical run that changes the dynamic substantially perhaps. But if, say, they beat Maryland and beat Wisconsin and they get to Saturday with those two wins, does that lift them into the 7 sphere? Because really the Maryland win won't get them anything, but the Wisconsin win would – to beat them twice. Does that get them into the 7 off the 8-9 line? And does that move them up?
Yes.
I think that'll be interesting because, as we know, sometimes the Big Ten tournament doesn't really have that much of an effect, particularly the championship game. But if you get to, you know, Thursday and Friday, you know, when they're still making those determinations and having those discussions, then, yeah, I think that could bump them up to the 7. You know, that's, you know, and again, that's, you know, you talk about the intent and scheduling. I mean, you look at Michigan State's non-conference schedule and it's going to bode well for them. You know, I mean, they've got the win over Loyola, which I think helps. I think they've got, you know, the win over UConn helps. So there's, you know, they're not going to talk about quality losses, but, you know, let's face it, they played well against Baylor for a half. That Baylor team obviously has had some struggles since then, but struggles versus, you know.
Oh. I mean, Baylor's still going to be a one seed, so yeah, struggles in quotes. So,
well, and Baylor's had a lot of injuries. You know,
I think if there's anything, that could be the one that happens where they can bump themselves up with a Wisconsin win. But let's say Johnny Davis is out. How does the committee look at that win? I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's that. You know, for Wisconsin, I don't know. You know, it for Wisconsin, it obviously stinks they couldn't close out the outright title. Not that stuff matters. Years later, nobody looks at co-championships and stuff. But in the moment, it feels a little more decisive. And I think if you win, the one thing not having a co-championship does, if you win it outright, I think is it negates the importance of the Big Ten tournament. You are the champion. Somebody else can be the Big Ten tournament champion, but the Big Ten champion is the regular season. And when you have a co-championship thing, you get teams that are, that, you know, you remember Ohio State, Michigan State in that great final in 2012, you know, Draymond Green senior year after they split during the regular season. Ohio State won on that final day when Brandon Dawson was hurt at Breslin, and how great that final was. And that felt like a decider. That felt like something that was separating the two co-champs, right? Or I don't even know if Ohio State – yeah, Ohio State must have been a co-champ that year. Somebody was. That was a – it was – you know, and so for Wisconsin, it feels like if somebody else, if say Illinois goes ahead and wins the Big Ten tournament championship, and they've got a share of the, you know, their championship is almost better than yours, and now you need to play and fight for it. Whereas, like, if they had wanted, and I don't think you mess with Johnny Davis's health anyway, but if you'd won it outright, I mean, I would have treated this like the Coca-Cola Classic in 1996 in East Lansing, and sat Johnny Davis and said, "You're not playing. We won the Big Ten. This is an exhibition, and you know, and if you don't play, it doesn't hurt us as much in the committee's eyes." But it will be interesting to see. I don't know if it'll hurt the team that plays them tremendously. That they don't tend to not look at those as good wins. It just tends not to be as bad a loss, I guess, when a team's hurt, but when a player's hurt. But yeah, I'm curious to see that matchup again, but I'm also really curious to see. I mean, Maryland has veteran guys that are going to be motivated as heck, I think, in this tournament. They've been playing for a while in the regular season without the ability to really do anything because they weren't going to be in the NCAA tournament based on their resume in the regular season. But Eric Al is a proud dude who's beaten Michigan State a lot and been a really good player. Fats Russell's a really good. These guys at the end of their careers who just lost a game where they got punked out of the gate. I think it's going to be a really tough game for Michigan State. I think it's very much 50-50. And beating a team for a third time is tough. The one advantage is they do not have, as good as Ayala is, as good as Russell is, this is not a Keegan Murray, Johnny Davis, Jaden Ivey. This is not a team with an All-American or lottery pick like most of the top of the league has.
Yeah, and, you know, even the guy that I think who presents the biggest problem for Michigan State, you know, Ayala, you know, you mentioned about, you know, the pride. I mean, you saw him come out of halftime and just start draining threes when they had gone 1-for-15 in the first half. I mean, it was there. But to me, the guy that is the toughest mark for Michigan State is Dante Scott. I think Scott is just a different kind of player, but I think Maryland's also much like Michigan State, a collective rather than like you said, a star-led team, which makes it unpredictable. You know, it's in a lot of ways like Michigan State is, you know who could step up on a given night. You just don't know. And the other caveat to this is how much do they like Danny Manning and wants to do something to try and get him that job permanently. And that's that's an interesting spot to be in. I think from a coaching standpoint for Manning, but also for the players who, you know, the guys that will be coming back that really have enjoyed their experience with Manning and want to give him the keys versus, you know, the rumors that are out there that guys like Rick Pitino might be interested in going to Maryland. It's a fascinating moment. You know, who'd have thought a year ago that it would have been at this point where, you know, there's no Mark Turgeon there and, You know, it's that's played a factor.
And I don't think Manning has a shot at the job, but that doesn't mean the players don't think it and don't want to play for him and don't want to and help him either get the next job or you know, there comes a certain point where you win enough and it's you can't get rid of a guy sometimes. And so I mean, you're right, and I also think that there's something to 4 days earlier getting beaten by a team. And going through the experience that Maryland did and having been beaten twice, I think they'll be supremely motivated. And I'd like to say that MSU will be too, but we've just seen too many games where MSU had everything to play for this year where they haven't looked very good out of the gate. So I don't trust MSU, and I have no idea what to expect.
Before we kind of talk more about the MSU-Maryland game, I kind of want to backtrack a little bit here and talk about the seniors a little bit. What do we make of the fact that Gabe Brown, Joey Hauser, and Marcus Bingham all participated in senior day activities, despite still having at least one more year of eligibility? Do we think that automatically means they are not coming back next year, or was that just more of a precautionary measure just in case, and they haven't made any decisions yet?
I mean, I don't think anything's official. I mean, the sense is that Hauser is about as official as you can get. But I mean, they're certainly making moves and talking like they're done, like this is their final run. I'll be very curious to see when they get out of the season. They may be expecting that now. And they look at their pro futures, and they have conversations with Izzo, what the coaching staff decides they want, what that roster needs, what the players decide they ultimately want, you know, if you want to do this again. I guess at this point I would say it's unlikely any of the three are back. I thought for a while Bingham would be the guy. And I think the stronger the end of the year Bingham has, where the better it goes with Izzo, the more I would think that perhaps. But I would lean towards all three being gone.
Well, I think the one thing that with Bingham's case that was to me fascinating in some ways was how much Izzo gushed over what Bingham did during that game on the sideline, on the bench, the energy that he brought, some of the things that he did in terms, I mean, it takes, you know, one thing that Izzo has done all, you know, pretty much since January is question the team's leadership. And it sounded to me like he saw something in Bingham that day in terms of leading other guys that maybe Bingham hasn't seen or shown all year. So, you know, that could be certainly something to keep an eye on. I mean, with you, you know, you listen, you know, I don't know if Tom Izzo will embrace the portal. I know as much as Michigan State fans want him to, and I know that he went and got Tyson Walker last year and explored other guys like John Herrar and some of the other guys that were in the portal that he didn't get or that stayed where they were at or went elsewhere. But I think it's still, to him, kind of the antithesis of what he sees college basketball as, which, you know, at the same point, he wants to win and he still wants to win another title. So maybe he needs to, maybe that becomes more of a priority and he tries to take the Mel Tucker route and load up a team for a big run. I don't know. I think it's going to be a fascinating off season, but I do think with those two open scholarships from this year, funding in the next year, it'll be interesting to see just, you know, I mean, those are basically scholarships that are kept open, I would think, you know, what we thought for a couple of these guys to come back next year. Whether that ends up being the case, it still remains to be seen, but there's also still, I would think that Izzo would think that there's still plenty of basketball left for these guys this year. But remember, last year, they were getting ready to go into the NCAA tournament already being linked to guys in the portal, so I don't know. It's a new world. So it's like you can look at what Tom Izzo has done for pretty much the entirety of his 27 seasons. And it completely goes out the window because everything has changed in the landscape of college basketball.
Hey, Chris, do you know who else Michigan State went after besides Herrar in the transfer portal last year?
Oh, off the top of my head, I can't remember. I know that they explored a couple bigs, I think. And, you know, obviously Walker, they were after right away and landed him. I don't know anybody else. I feel like there may have been a couple other guys.
Yeah, there was a lady they looked at. I can't remember who was. But yeah, no,
it's one of the Rutgers guys, maybe.
Yeah, it's been a while since we went through that track and yeah. Throwing the names off the top. It's
that was old. It was just a bit of a sidebar question there anyway. So, you know, leading into this Michigan Maryland game on Thursday, you guys have talked a lot about how it's hard to beat a team three times, and
you just say Michigan Maryland game. People are going to be unhappy with that.
Michigan, yeah, come on, what a failure on my part. You guys get it. Listeners, you guys get it. Michigan State Maryland. You guys talked about how hard it is to beat a team three times and the fact that Maryland beat Michigan State in this game last season. So I guess what is the key for Michigan State to, you know, keep its head, keep its focus, and get this third win over Maryland and a chance to play Wisconsin on Friday?
They've got to defend like they did out of the gate against Maryland the other day. Yeah. They've got to play with that edge. Their key guys got to have good performances. Help if Hogard's back to being himself would certainly help. Basically what they did the other day works, you know, and they're not going to get one for 15. They may not get the marble throw the ball in from 16 feet. They may not get Bingham three threes, but you know, they went up 15 at Maryland too for a reason. So certainly they've got to hit shots. That goes without saying, all that stuff. Gabe Brown's gotta be deep. You know, it's all the same things all year, but I think it begins with where they've struggled in recent games when things have gone wrong, and that's defending out of the gate. They were as dialed in as I've seen them in a while, even more so than Purdue in terms of getting into people, forcing tough shots, helping out in the gaps. Like that first half and parts of the second half defensively, that's where it starts, because if they keep themselves in that way, they can – find other things. They can figure everything out. Maryland's not so good they're going to run away from them. I don't think like other teams have. Having said that, it'll be like 20-2 Maryland on Thursday. But that to me, it's the defense out of the gate.
I think as well, you know, that's a big thing. But they also were attacking the boards as good as I've seen them in a while as well. Maybe it's a matchup thing. They didn't really necessarily have to play the kind of bigs that they played down the stretch that have kind of pushed them around. That's kind of Maryland's got a little bit more of a fitting game that meshes up with them in the post, from a defensive and rebounding standpoint. And they were able to get out and run too, which I think Maryland was the perfect elixir to all the problems that they were having. Because a lot of those teams were jamming them up and not letting them get out and run in transition and overpowering them on the post. So I think, to me, I think from a pure matchup standpoint, it's probably a little better than maybe facing Indiana again. And you know, but at the same point, you know, we still don't know which team's going to show up. I mean, which Max Christie are we going to see? That's still going to be critical, because I think that, you know, the more minutes that he's played, I think his defense has started to dwindle from where it was earlier in the year. It's understandable because he's still a freshman. He's still playing so many minutes. He's lost confidence in his offense. I mean, he's airballing, you know, little floaters from 10 feet away, which is, you know, it's fascinating kind of watching what's happened to him with the lack of confidence and the lack of legs from what he's put in on the defensive end. But I think that he's got to kind of use these couple days of extra rest to kind of get his game and his mind right in particular. And I think those seniors are critical to doing that. I think the seniors having the games that they did maybe allows them to get out of their own head a little bit and try and help Chrissy now get out of his head to kind of get that extra piece that's kind of been missing really for this back half of the season.
I know in previous years on this podcast, we have kind of gone, sometimes we've gone game by game for the Big Ten tournament, but we will not do that this year. But I will ask you guys to make a prediction for who will win the Big Ten tournament this year. Graham, I will start with you.
Right. I would have said Purdue a week ago. That they're going to rise up and get it done. I always look at motivation with these tournaments. And while I think, you know, somebody like Rutgers could be a good long shot pick. And I think Iowa to get a piece of Iowa played well enough late to think they're the best team in the league for them to think that. and what it would mean to win a Big Ten tournament. I would say Iowa having to play the extra game is tough, but Iowa is somebody I like a lot to do it, and I like Purdue on the other end. You know, even though Purdue's been helter skelter, and so Iowa Purdue, I'm done picking Purdue. They've let me down all year, and if they blow this in the NCAA tournament, it's a shame. I think that's where their focus will be. They'd love to have a Big Ten tournament title, but these teams that give me Iowa.
Give me Illinois. I think that, they've got a chance to have a very big postseason. And I think this is, when you talk about motivation, I kind of agree with you, but I also think they're also a team that's in need of building some of that rhythm. And they started to down the stretch. They had that loss to Ohio State. They lost to Rutgers. They lost to Purdue. They had that stretch there where it was, up and down. And then they went out their last three was Michigan, Penn State, and Iowa, all of which were playing really good basketball. I think from a rhythm standpoint, if I'm Brad Underwood, I want to keep that going. I want to ride the inside out that they've got with Frazier and Curbelo and Coburn. And I think that, that I think could lend them to build the rhythm going into the NCAA tournament. And as you mentioned earlier, a chance to say, no, not quite Wisconsin. We really were the best team all year. We didn't just backdoor our way into this.
I am with you, Graham, for better or for worse. I was going to say Iowa before you said Iowa, and no Fran fade, at least until the NCAA tournament this year is my prediction. So.
Yeah, I'm with Chris. I think the winner of that Iowa Illinois game on that side is going to be the team I would pick. For whatever reason, though, Illinois is not matched up with Purdue as well as some other people, and it might be the two bigs and the similarities of certain things. So that's the weird thing. If I don't like Purdue unless they're playing Illinois, even though Illinois is better than most teams. Just it's matchups, right? So but. If you were asking me where I would put my money, no longer 35-1, it's more like 18-1. But Rutgers is still a heck of a play on for that. Iowa's odds have gone up. There was a point a week ago where I hope you jumped on Rutgers and Iowa. Iowa was still like 8-1 or something like that. It was still a really good play.
All right, there's Graham's gambling corner for this week. Before we move to predictions, I guess we would be remiss if I at least didn't mention. That with Sunday's win against Maryland, that Tom Izzo got his 663rd win with the Spartans, which is the most victories by a coach at a Big Ten school, I believe, is the official designation for that number. We saw a bunch of banners, not banners, but a bunch of signs with the 663 on them and everything. And obviously, it was a pretty big deal to Tom. And, Steven had the ball. His son Steven had the ball. At the end of the game, and it looked like Tom was going to tear up a little bit after all that went down. So at least it was a big deal in some regard. I think I said this. He passes Bob Knight for that record. Graham, what kind of any significance do you take with that milestone reached?
Well, I mean, it's absolutely significant. It's pretty amazing given who Izzo, Izzo barely survived his third year, right? That's the old line, and. A guy who took a program that was in, NIT and NIT every other year, just about for a while, and made them sort of the envy of every other middling program. And the number of coaches that have been fired because of Tom Izzo is probably in the hundreds, from coaches that from ADs that want their program to replicate what Izzo has done at MSU, to take a program of that stature and take it to a different stature. It's like with Gonzaga and mid-majors, every moron AD at some little school wants their program to be the next Gonzaga and doesn't put the resources in. But so I think it's something that may never be broken. It would take Matt Painter a long time to do it, and especially since Izzo is still coaching. It's absolutely significant, and it's frankly quite remarkable given that coaches don't do that much anymore in terms of one place and winning that much.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a testament to his longevity at Michigan State because Knight had 663 wins at Indiana, but he had about 900 total. know, between what he did at Army and then what he did at Texas Tech after that. So, I mean, I put that as a mark that I don't think people coming into this year or really even into early January knew existed. I think it's a record that's important in some ways, but the bigger and more important one that I think is out there still, and I think if you had to pin Izzo down on it, this would be the one that's more important to him, is breaking Bob Knight's 353 wins in Big Ten play. That's always to him been the bigger story, and you know, this is why he values conference championships over tournament championships as well. You know, the ability to do it through a 16, 18, 20 game grind, win those titles. And, you know, that's how Bob Knight built his. And, you know, he's at 322 right now and Knight's at 353. So he's got a couple more years to kind of catch up there, I think. But it's still a pretty significant record. I mean, because, you know, all those, what I think is interesting about that is all 663 of those were at Michigan State. And not many coaches can say that. Not many coaches can say they've spent their entirety of their career at one school and done as much as Izzo has. So I do think there is something to be said about that. But I think that Big Ten league wins record is the one that matters a little bit more. And what else is interesting, if he's one win away from tying John Wooden and Jim Larrañaga for 30th in Division I history at 664. So now you put him next, you know, the next step, the next win. The last one gets you a record with Bob Knight. This one gets you a record with John Wooden. You know, it might be 30th, but that's still a significant thing when you think about who John Wooden is in the history of basketball.
Predictions for Thursday's game versus Maryland, Graham.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna take Michigan State because I think they're a slightly better team than Maryland. I think they've got better depth. You know, but I'm putting it at like 51%, and so give me Michigan State. You know, 71, Maryland 69, and if it's a 20-point win for Maryland, though, I will not be surprised.
Chris.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's a 20-point win for Michigan State either, because that's just how this season has gone, right? I mean, you know, we talk about the question mark with Maryland. I mean, if they're not looking at a postseason, how invested are they in this game? So, but I still think it's going to be a dogfight because there's a lot of pride with those guys. So I do think Michigan State wins it and it advances to Friday. I think they win by about 8. You know, hit some clutch shots and free throws down the stretch and get some rest and come back and try and get Wisconsin again. That's kind of what we see is the up. I think we're seeing a little bit of an up for Michigan State right now.
All right. Any final thoughts before we sign off for this week?
Well, we're a week out from spring football starting. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important. Michigan State added a transfer from Washington State and Brian Green, who, you know, an interior lineman, center guard, that helps for sure going into the summer, but he's obviously not here at the moment. So it's going to be the biggest thing to watch going into this and coming out of even last year, we talked about is the offensive line. So that's a different topic for another day, because once you get to March, you know, spring football usually won't get really going and discussed all that much around here until whenever the basketball season ends.
Yep. January, February, Izzo, I believe the saying goes, right, guys?
Yes, that is the saying. And you know what? I know that, you know, it probably gets overplayed, but there's a reason that happened, right? That occurred, that became a thing. He's had some marches where things have gone amazingly well after even seasons that weren't great. I don't think this is going to be one of them, but I have been wrong before. Once or twice.
No. That's the win of the podcast, that Graham admitted he's been wrong before.
Once or twice.
All right. Thank you for joining us for this edition of Spartan Speak, a production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and the USA Today Network. If you enjoy this podcast and the work surrounding it, please consider subscribing. You can follow our coverage at lsj.com, freep.com, and on Twitter at @Graham_couch, @Chris Solari, @Phil_friend, and @LSJ_greenwhite. Thanks for listening.